The United States remains committed to the complete, verifiable, and permanent denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
President Trump heads to Asia with North Korea, trade, and the South China Sea expected high on his agenda. It's Friday, November 3rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're part of the program. Join us on our VOA Asia social media platforms. Also ahead, Myanmar's leader heads to Rakhine State. Migrants refuse to leave an Australian-run camp in Papua New Guinea. And Alibaba posts record profits. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Trump leaves Washington later today for a 12-day trip to Asia, with North Korea, trade, and the South China Sea expected high on his agenda. At a midday briefing at the White House Thursday, National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster said Mr. Trump has several goals for this trip.
The president's trip will focus on three goals. First, strengthening international resolve to denuclearize North Korea. Second, promote a free and open Indo-Pacific region. Third, advance American prosperity through fair and reciprocal trade and economic practices.
McMaster said that denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula remains President Trump's top priority, and the president will emphasize that in his meetings with world leaders.
The United States remains committed to the complete, verifiable, and permanent denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. President Trump will reiterate the plain fact that North Korea threatens not just our allies South Korea and Japan and the United States. North Korea is a threat to the entire world, so all nations of the world must do more to counter that threat.
After stops in Japan, South Korea, and China, Mr. Trump will attend the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation meeting in Vietnam. McMaster said Thursday the president will emphasize the need for free and fair trade in the region.
The president will stress his commitment to free, fair, and reciprocal trade. He looks forward to working with partners across the Indo-Pacific region to ensure that governments do not unfairly subsidize their industries, discriminate against foreign business, or restrict foreign investment. This will help increase trade, reduce unsustainable deficits, and promote prosperity for the American people and the people of the Indo-Pacific region.
The United States sees Vietnam as a key ally when it comes to pushback against China's expansion into the South China Sea. However, one of the first moves that Trump took as president was to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which included Vietnam. The president will also attend the ASEAN summit in Manila and will meet with Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte. As part of his trip to Asia, President Trump will stop in Beijing for meetings with Chinese President Xi Jinping, and North Korea is expected to be high on their agenda. As VOA's Bill Ide reports, Chinese officials have voiced confidence the trip could bring some significant outcomes, but analysts in China say that depends largely on Trump's approach.
Much has changed since President Trump and Chinese leader Xi Jinping met for the first time in Florida earlier this year. And much hasn't. Trade is still a huge issue. Just days before his trip, Trump called America's deficit with China embarrassing and horrible. North Korea has rocketed to the forefront of the relationship. During his visit, President Trump will try to press Beijing to do more to sway Pyongyang. But analysts here say there are limits to how far China will go, noting Beijing has already backed some of the toughest sanctions against North Korea to date.
China called and to launch some, you know, although limited but still more substantial, and a trade concession to Mr. Trump, and which and will not hurt China's economy and finance.
Recently anointed China's most powerful leader since Mao Zedong, Xi Jinping will be looking to create a good atmosphere and show he's a successful world leader.
But also China and want to persuade Mr. Trump that do not to launch so much and so constant extraordinary military threat of strike against North Korea. This will and backfired to stimulate Kim Jong-un to even further escalate his nuclear and missile activity.
On the streets in Beijing, some express concern about North Korea and the threat it poses to China and the region.
If we can, we should use peaceful means to deal with him. But if he insists on antagonizing the world and using force to destroy others, all we can do is use force to destroy him.
However, for most, America's immigration policies under Trump and visas were a bigger concern, one some hope the visit will improve.
A lot of my classmates who have gone overseas would like to stay in the United States, to either live there or work. But if Trump adopts a more xenophobic policy, it will be more difficult to do that. I think many would like to see further loosening of visa policies. Many want to go to the United States. It is still very attractive.
Few VOA spoke with expect a quick fix on North Korea or the two countries' big differences to go away anytime soon. Responding to Trump's comments about the trade deficit Thursday, China says the huge gap is not intentional. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
For more on this story, you can always log on to our website. That's voanews.com. These are among the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Trump readies for 12-day trip to Asia. Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi visits Rakhine State. China's push to study Xi thought gets mixed reaction. Vietnam hoping for revised Pacific Rim Trade Pact. U.S.-Chinese officials discuss anti-drug cooperation. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia now continues. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Hundreds of migrant men seeking refuge or asylum in Australia are refusing to leave an Australian-run migrant camp in Papua New Guinea, which closed earlier this week. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports, Australia says the men must move into alternative housing, but the United Nations says the new facilities are not yet ready.
The United Nations Refugee Agency says new accommodation blocks for former detainees on Manus Island haven't been finished. It's a claim disputed by Australia, which insists the housing is ready and is urging 600 men to abandon their occupation of the Migrant Processing Centre in Papua New Guinea that officially closed on Tuesday. Since 2013, Australia has held asylum seekers who try to reach its shores by boat at two processing facilities in the South Pacific, one in Papua New Guinea, the other on the tiny island of Nauru. Rights groups have repeatedly condemned conditions inside the camps, but Australian officials say the tough asylum policy restricts the people smuggling trade and saves lives at sea. Australian Immigration Minister Peter Dutton says his country won't resettle any refugees from Manus Island.
We won't be budging from our position because it's in our national interest to keep the policies in place that we've got, and these people can go back to their countries of origin if they've been found not to be refugees, or they can settle in PNG like many people have done before them, but under no circumstance will they be settling here.
Photographs taken by a Kurdish-Iranian refugee apparently show some of the men digging into the ground inside the compound on Manus Island in search of water. Many of the asylum seekers and refugees say they fear for their safety in the local community because of several violent attacks on detainees in recent months. Papua New Guinea authorities say that the military is preparing to take control of the site. Last year, a court in Papua New Guinea ruled the camp on Manus Island was unconstitutional. Former US President Barack Obama had agreed to take up to 1,250 refugees from Australia's offshore camps, but only about 50 have been resettled so far. It's unclear how many will eventually be offered visas to the United States. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, the death toll from an explosion at a thermal power plant in northern India has climbed to 26. At least 60 others were injured when the explosion spewed hot ash over workers at the plant. The death toll could rise as some people have been hospitalized with severe burns after a pipe carrying ash from a burning coal boiler exploded late Wednesday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi traveled Thursday to the troubled northern Rakhine state for the first time since the start of a brutal military campaign against minority Rohingya Muslims. Suu Kyi met with the Rohingya Muslim community in Paudipien village near Mongdao. She also traveled to the Myanmar-Bangladesh border and met with the families of the Border Guard Police Force at the Tongbu-Bangladesh-Myanmar Friendship Bridge. VOA's Burmese service reports Myanmar's de facto leader told Rohingya villagers she wants to see the reconstruction of their community, urging those tasked with implementing reconstruction to take villagers' specific needs into account. She called on villagers to speak out about their needs and concerns before that implementation begins. Aung San Suu Kyi said she expects reconstruction to go smoothly, and she concluded her talk by expressing her eagerness to provide proper education for the children in areas affected by violence. The Nobel Peace Laureate has come under withering criticism from the international community over her slow response to the crisis. About 600,000 Rohingya have fled Myanmar for Bangladesh since August. The unrest in Rakhine State started after deadly attacks on police stations, which were blamed on a militant group, the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army. Dozens of people were killed in a subsequent military crackdown. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Senior U.S. lawmakers have proposed targeted sanctions and travel restrictions on Myanmar military officials over the treatment of the country's Rohingya Muslim minority. Congressional aides said the move is intended to underscore a strong desire among many members of Congress for Aung San Suu Kyi to do more to help the Rohingya. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for the top stories and great features to see and to share. President Donald Trump said on Thursday that chipmaker Broadcom Limited is moving its headquarters from Singapore to the United States. Broadcom manufactures communication chips around the world and said it would relocate its legal address to the state of Delaware once shareholders approve the move. That would bring $20 billion in annual revenue back to the United States and will allow Broadcom to avoid a cumbersome federal review process. President Trump praised the company's move, saying that it would help bring jobs and confidence to American workers.
Broadcom Limited is a Fortune 100 company, one of the really great, great companies. They manufacture technology and parts. They employ over 7,500 American workers in many states across our country. We're looking forward to seeing that number grow very substantially, which is now anticipated to do.
Trump made the announcement at the White House with a press conference, joined by Broadcom Chief Executive Hock Tan. Mr. Tan said the current business climate makes the United States the best place to locate his company headquarters.
Our commitment to redomicile into the United States is a huge reaffirmation to our shareholders, to the 7,500 employees we have across 24 states in America today, that America is once again the best place to lead a business with a global footprint.
The company makes a wide range of semiconductor products for wireless communication, smartphones, data center networking, and other markets. It's currently incorporated in Singapore and co-headquartered there and in San Jose, California. A year ago, the company earned a $5.5 billion U.S. agreement to merge with U.S. network provider Brocade Communication Systems. But that has been delayed while it's scrutinized by the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. A high-level government committee, familiarly known as CFIUS, investigates proposed acquisitions of U.S. companies by foreign buyers on national security and intellectual property grounds. Meanwhile, the Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba announced Thursday that soaring sales fueled a 132% increase in net profit in what it called an outstanding quarter. The firm raised its expectations for full-year revenue growth. China's biggest e-commerce company said the net profit for the 3 months ending September 30th reached $2.67 billion. That's up from the same period in 2016. Alibaba reported solid revenue growth across its core commerce, cloud computing, digital media, and other divisions. Sales growth in core commerce grew 63%, which accounted for 72% of the overall group revenue. The company is expecting a further shot in the arm in about a week when it holds its 11/11 shopping extravaganza on November 11th. It said hundreds of millions of consumers are expected to participate in the annual Festival of Consumption. This news alert from VOA Asia. The U.S. Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral John Richardson, says recent deadly accidents in the service force were preventable. The USS John S. McCain and an oil tanker collided near Singapore in August, leaving 10 U.S. sailors dead. 7 sailors died in June when the USS Fitzgerald and a container ship collided off Japan, and the USS Lake Champlain collided with a Korean fishing vessel. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Modern forensics have come a long way with the use of DNA evidence and fingerprint databases, but it's not always easy to match a full set of prints, especially if a corpse is stranded in the desert and scavenging animals have been picking it apart. But as Arish Arabasadi tells us, a new FBI database aims to share as much information despite the few clues available.
When this is all that's left, forensic pathologists don't have much to work with to identify the dead.
If I was missing, or if one of my loved ones was missing in a far off, the migrant issue, in a far off place, I'd want to think that that government was doing everything they could to figure out who that person was, to notify me.
Dr. Bruce Anderson is a forensic anthropologist. Part of his job is to identify the dead.
This is typical of what we get out of the desert.
Since scavengers feast on remains, he's sometimes left with only bits and pieces to solve the mysteries of the dead. That's where a new FBI database comes into play.
The standard fingerprint searching system for identity searches all 10 fingers, whereas our system allows us to search one finger at a time.
By using a new algorithm, the FBI now has a larger database to search more difficult fingerprints, piecing together what's left of bodies picked apart by scavengers. That helps update case files languishing from a lack of forensic clues, and those clues can bring closure to people like James Downey, whose brother vanished in 1983.
The FBI said that he was beaten to death and just chucked out of the field. It was kind of tough to hear. And, but the years have passed, so.
Out here in the Sonoran Desert that covers parts of Mexico, California, and Arizona, immigrants illegally crossing the border into the U.S. don't always survive the trip. This man died in the desert in 1995, but it wasn't until 2017 that he was identified through the FBI's new fingerprint process.
I'm a dad, I'm a grandfather, I'm a son, I'm a brother. So both professionally and personally, it's satisfying to give families answers.
These are paper charts.
Anderson has about 1,000 files of unidentified dead. And so far, through the FBI's expanded fingerprint process, the agency has given names to more than 200 people who anonymously died, about 40% of them in Arizona alone. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Next week will mark 1 year since Donald Trump was elected U.S. president. VOA's Penelope Pulu tells us now about a new documentary that looks at that election from several perspectives, from those who supported Mr. Trump and those who did not.
Did you vote today?
From the liberal college student to the conservative West Virginia coal miner.
The election, the future for the coal industry.
Jeff Deutschman's documentary, 11-8-16, follows American voters during Election Day last November. He showcases 16 out of the 50 voters his team of filmmakers had followed that day across the United States.
We wanted it to be a broad cross-section of individuals that represented, you know, diversity geographically, demographically, and ideologically.
From a Sikh cabbie supporting Democrat Hillary Clinton in Queens, New York, to an exonerated convict in Alabama who gets back his right to vote for the first time in 30 years, to a pro-Donald Trump military veteran in Miami and a dreamer whose future is at stake if Trump won, 11-8-16 shows that people voted on issues they felt affected them personally. The film also shows that most believed media projections that Hillary Clinton was going to win.
The election will be over by 9 o'clock. They'll call it by 9:30, and everything will be peaceful and wonderful.
What if it goes the other way?
What? Not going to go the other way. No way. Mark it down.
Jeff Deutschman says his documentary reveals deep cultural divisions in American society the media missed.
So I think it's important not to get stuck in the echo chambers that we all live in. You know, we surround ourselves with people virtually and in real life that are like-minded, and I understand that. I do it as much as anyone. But I think it's really important to try and regularly confront the fact that of how big this country is, and to allow that vastness to inform the decisions that we make about how we vote and, you know, how we speak.
The film does not take sides. We get invested in these 16 characters who, despite their political leanings, make compelling arguments based on their circumstances, as in the case of Tom, a small businessman from Massachusetts.
If the economy got better and I was bringing more people and more work into my shop and I could delegate a little bit more, then I'd be able to spend more time with my family. That'd be huge. That would be huge for me.
The film also shows how campaign messages and partisan media feed into people's prejudices and fears.
When Hillary gets elected, and I think she's going to get elected because she's going to
cheat.
She's going to cheat. She's going to raise the taxes on everybody, and healthcare right now is crushing us anyway. So I'm concerned that we're going to have a tough time making ends meet.
Take that stupid hat off, man.
I will not take this hat off.
On the other side of the spectrum, the documentary also shows the concerns of minorities if Donald Trump won. Deutschman says a year later, America remains deeply polarized across the same lines. He hopes that films like his, by humanizing the American electorate, can encourage dialogue. Penelope Poulou, VOA News.
To see video of this story, log on to our website. That's voanews.com. And finally, a new species of orangutan has been discovered in the remote jungles of Indonesia, immediately becoming the world's most endangered great ape. The species, called Tapanuli orangutan, lives in Batang Toru Forest on Sumatra Island and numbers only about 800 in total, making it the most endangered great ape in the world. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can download our podcast and take us with you if you'd like. You can also get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can find us at voanews.com. Let us hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. A shout out to some of our affiliates, DZUP 1602 AM Radio at the University of the Philippines and Falcon Radio at Adamson University, also in the Philippines. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling, and thank you for being with us. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy your day.